Okay, Tom, ready? You just...
Yeah, sure, we're ready to go.
I'll just go back to Studio B.
I just was going to say, you can't use Studio B today. You're going to have to use Studio L instead.
Studio L?
Yeah, it's over there. It's around that corner, kind of toward the back.
Okay.
There's a sort of a dusty sign on it, but you can make it out. It says
whatever.
It says Studio L on it. The microphone switches Studio L. Got them on.
Boy, this is Studio L?
Yep, that's Studio L, Bob.
It's dark in here.
Well,
I can't see it. Oh, my foot.
It's going to be fine.
It's cold in here. Where's the microphone? Where do I go?
Well, it's all right. Don't worry about it. You're fine. Well, it's right over there in the corner.
Tom, listen, I can't do my show in here. This is ridiculous. I can't do this. Why can't I use Studio B? I always use Studio B. I had a reserve for tonight.
Okay, Bob, you can use Studio B.
Thank you. I'll meet you there in a minute.
All right. Goes $20 out the door. Ugh. Hey, listen, you guys, Bob, Carol, hey, Ted and Alice, hey, listen, you guys in there, you're going to have to stop. Listen, Bob is coming in to do the show. Yes, yes. Hey, stop it. Come on. Come on. Shut it down. Listen, I've got somebody coming in. Get your clothes on.
Okay, Tom, I just come in here and, right, you just start the music, no, suppose you know, better late than never. Hi everybody, Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, a 30-minute workout for your sense of humor, which airs every Friday night here on KCRW. And if that sounded familiar, it's because that was the opening of Funny Stuff on October 21st, 1983, and I thought as long as we're going to be listening to the best of the comedy that's been heard on Funny Stuff, we also might listen back to the best of the openings that we did. Yes, I can finally admit that those were prepared openings. Not that anybody out there really believed that I had that much trouble getting my show started every week. But it also gives me an opportunity to thank the people that helped on those, because in many instances, more work went into preparing those openings than into the program. Certainly took more time for that minute and a half at the beginning of the program. First of all, thanks go out to Tom Strother, who is the production director here at KCRW. And although he does not produce this or engineer this show, we pretended that he did, but I engineer it myself. But he portrayed the character of Tom the Engineer, and those of us that know Tom can appreciate the character that he portrayed, because Tom is in reality one of the more capable people on this planet, and it was quite a character for Tom to have created. In listening back to all of them, I've decided that the ones that worked well mainly worked because of Tom's surprising comedic ability. And he even came up with some of the ideas. I came up with some of the ideas, and a lot of them came from the fertile brain of my wife, Kathy Sloan Claster, to whom also thanks are due. Also, thanks to Jackie DeLaurier, KCRW's own Jackie DeLaurier, who portrayed a librarian in one of them. We'll be listening to another, hopefully one of your favorite openings next week. Funny Stuff began a year ago, and that's what we're doing here. We're listening back to some of the better things that have gone out over Funny Stuff. And the first show was one on Woody Allen. I've gotten some mail from people that have asked me to do a show on Woody Allen, and nothing breaks my heart more than people that write in and ask me to do shows on people that I've already done, and I know that they went out over the air before these people started listening to the program, and that's part of the reason for what we're doing tonight. Anyhow, this is an excerpt from the first Funny Stuff program, which aired the first Friday night in January, 1983.
I was kidnapped once. I was standing in front of my schoolyard, and a black sedan pulls up, and two guys get out, and they say to me, do I want to go away with them to a land where everybody is fairies and elves? I could have all the comic books I want, and chocolate, and wax lips, you know. And I said yes, you know. And I got into the car with them because I figured, you know, what the hell? I was home that weekend from college anyhow. You know. They drive me off and they send a ransom note to my parents. And my father has bad reading habits. So he gets into bed at night with the ransom note. And he read half of it, you know. And he got drowsy and fell asleep. Then he lent it out, you know. Meanwhile, they take me to New Jersey, bound and gagged. And my parents finally realize that I'm kidnapped. And they snap into action immediately. They rent out my room. The ransom note says for my father to leave $1,000 in a hollow tree in New Jersey. He has no trouble raising $1,000, but he gets a hernia carrying the hollow tree. The FBI surround the house. Throw the kid out, they say. Give us your guns and come out with your hands up. The kidnappers say, we'll throw the kid out, but let us keep our guns and get to our car. The FBI says, throw the kid out. We'll let you get to your car, but give us your guns. The kidnappers say, we'll throw the kid out and let us keep our guns. We don't have to get to our car. The FBI says, keep the kid. The FBI decides to lob in tear gas, but they don't have tear gas. So several of the agents put on the death scene from Camille. Tear-stricken, my abductors give themselves up. They're sentenced to 15 years on a chain gang, and they escape, 12 of them chained together at the ankle, getting by the guards posing as an immense charm bracelet.
That was Woody Allen from, as I said, the very first episode of, very first edition of Funny Stuff. Another early edition of Funny Stuff, and this I got a lot of mail on. A lot of people wanted to get a copy of this, and it is hard to find. Here's from a show we did on Mike Nichols and Elaine May. A lot of people wanted tapes of this or something, so get your tape recorders going, because here is, in my opinion, the best thing they ever did. It's a piece from their Broadway show entitled Mother and Son.
Hello.
Hello, Arthur. This is your mother. Do you remember me?
Hi. Mom, hi. I was just going to call you. Is that a funny
Arthur,
thing? You know that I had my hand
Arthur,
on the phone
to call.
Arthur,
you were supposed to call me last Friday.
Mother, darling, I just didn't have a second, and
you
I could cut my throat.
Second.
I was so busy.
Arthur, that phone all day Friday.
It was just work, work, work. And
all
darling,
day Friday night.
I kept thinking, I got to call Mom.
All day Saturday.
Oh, listen, believe me.
All day Sunday. And your father said to me, Phyllis, eat something. You'll faint.
Darling,
I said, no, Harry, no. I don't want my mouth to be full when my son called.
Mom.
He never called.
Mother, I was sending up Vanguard. I didn't have a second.
Well, it's always something, isn't it?
Okay, honey.
You know, Arthur, I'm sure that all the other scientists there have mothers, you know? And I'm sure that they all find time after their breakfast or before their count off
down
to pick up a phone and call their mother.
Honey, listen, now you have
you
me on the phone.
You know how I worry.
Well, I do. That's the point.
I read
that's
in the paper how you keep losing them.
Mother! I don't lose them.
Well, I nearly went out of my mind.
Okay, honey,
I thought, what if they're taking it out of his pay?
All right.
You don't even write me a letter.
Right,
is that
it.
So hard?
Okay.
I'm your mother.
Right, mother, look, darling, please,
I'll send
honey,
you
Mom,
stamps.
Dear,
it's
please,
so
don't. Just tell
letter.
Me how you
That's
are,
so
Mom.
Hard.
Tell me how you are. How are you?
I'm sick.
I'm sorry to hear it. I really am. What's wrong?
Nothing. You know what it is, honey.
Yeah.
the same thing it's always been.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
It's
yeah.
my nerves.
Yeah.
And I went to the doctor, and he told me right out. Yeah, he said, listen, Mrs. White, who are you fooling?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
You are a very nervous, very high-strung woman.
Yeah. Well, God knows that's true. Yeah.
And you cannot stand the slightest aggravation.
Yeah, sure,
well,
yeah.
I said, doctor, I know that. Yeah. I know that, too.
Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
you see, doctor, I have this son. He is. You know, it's the truth. The boy is not lying. He is. He's very busy. You see, doctor, he's too busy to pick up a phone and call his mother.
Honey, listen, Mom,
well,
dear,
Arthur,
I want you to tell...
when I said that to him, that man turned pale.
Right, dear, Mom.
He said, Mrs. White, I have been a doctor for 35 years, and I've never heard of a son too busy to call his mother.
Right, Mom, dear,
that's
listen,
that's just what he said to me, Arthur.
I know, honey,
And that man is a doctor.
Mom, Mother, please, dear. Will you just tell me, what did the doctor say they're going to do with you?
Well... I may be in the hospital for a while, so...
The hospital?
Yes, the hospital.
Well, but what are they going to do?
Well, they'll x-ray my nerves.
Mother, why didn't you let me know? All you had to do was drop...
Honey, I thought you were going to aggravate yourself.
I
wouldn't have brought it up.
How can I not aggravate myself?
It's a little tiny... It's nothing. Forget it. How's your hangnail?
All right. Mother,
yes.
Please, just don't worry.
Arthur... What does that mean? Honey, what does that mean, don't worry?
Nothing, actually. I don't know. I just said the first thing that came into my head. It was a
Arthur,
mistake.
Arthur, listen to me. I'm a mother.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, you know. I should have realized,
what's
and I didn't.
What's the use of talking,
no, it was a
you
mistake.
Know?
I'm sorry. No,
you're very young.
Well, I...
Someday, Arthur,
Mom.
You'll get married.
Mom?
And you'll have children of your own.
Mom.
And honey, when you do, I only pray that they make you suffer the way you're making me. That's all I pray, Arthur. That's a mother's prayer.
Okay, Mom, thanks for calling.
You're very sarcastic.
Mother, I'm doing my best now. You called me on the telephone. I tried to explain to you how...
Don't hit me. I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry that I bothered you. And look, I hope I didn't make you feel bad.
Are you kidding? I feel awful.
Oh, honey, if I could believe that, I'd be the happiest mother in the world.
Oh, Mother, it's true. What do you think? I feel crummy.
Arthur, honey... Why don't you call me, sweetheart? Look, you know, Arthur, I know that I nag you, you know. Listen, I'm a nagging mother. What are you going to do? No, I'm kidding. Honey, you know, you're my baby. And Arthur, you're the only baby I've got. And honey, no matter how old you get, when you get to be 80 years old, you're going to be my baby, you know? And when you don't call me, sweetheart, I can't help it. I worry. So is that so hard to pick up a phone and call your mommy? Please, baby, please.
Yeah, well, I will, I promise.
You say it, and then you really,
really
promise.
Will, I promise.
Well, then you make your mommy so happy.
If mommy's happy, then he's happy. Okay,
right,
mommy.
And mommy wants to wish you lots of luck with your rocket.
Thank you, mommy.
And remember, Dad, I love you.
I love you too, mommy.
Goodbye, baby.
Goodbye, mommy. Nani nuni, nani nuni.
Mike Nichols and Elaine May. One of the most popular programs in the series of Funny Stuff has been the interview that I did with Tom Lehrer. It first aired on the 4th of March in 83, and I reran it one night when we weren't actually scheduled to be on. And then I later expanded it into an hour, and that aired on 8/19/83. And I've been accused of milking this interview for all that it's worth. I think it stands up to it. I haven't actually milked it. It wasn't really my idea. Well, you don't need to hear this anyway. But here's a brief example, a brief excerpt from the interview. And I'll follow that with one of the rarest recordings I've played on this program, and that is a 45 by Tom Lehrer. I've gotten a lot of requests to play this again so that people can tape it. And this is one of the most requested items for this program. And it is the, it's not really orchestral, but not really symphonic, but it's the orchestral version of Poisoning Pigeons in the Park.
Look at all the people. I can give you a long list. Tennessee Williams, who just died. Richard Rodgers, Sheldon Harnick, people who did wonderful things. And yeah, they kept writing for the last 20 years, but it doesn't matter. They said what they had to say before. And as I said, I could turn out some little jingly things and they'd be funny and clever and cute, but they wouldn't really be saying anything particular. Maybe if I got real mad, I could write something about what I really thought and be my last record.
No, but there isn't really... You don't necessarily have to say something terribly profound. You just have to make people laugh. I mean, you're awfully good at that.
I don't think that I am good at that anymore. I mean, that's good. Anyway, I think... I feel that the pressure shouldn't be on me. There's 200 million other people out there. Why aren't they doing it?
Spring is here, a suffering is here. Life is Skittles and life is beer. I think the loveliest time of the year is the spring. I do, don't you? Of course you do. But there's one thing that makes spring complete for me and makes every Sunday a treat for me. All the world seems in tune on a spring afternoon when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. Every Sunday you'll see my sweetheart and me as we poison the pigeons in the park. When they see us coming, the birdies all try and hide, but they still go for peanuts when coated with cyanide. The sun's shining bright, everything seems all right when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. We've gained notoriety and caused much anxiety in the Audubon Society with our games. They call it impiety and lack of propriety and quite a variety of unpleasant names. But it's not against any religion to want to dispose of a pigeon. So if Sunday you're free, why don't you come with me and we'll poison the pigeons in the park. And maybe we'll do in a squirrel or two while we're poisoning pigeons in the park. We'll murder them all amid laughter and merriment, except for the few we take home to experiment. My pulse will be quickening with each drop of strychnine we feed to a pigeon. It just takes a smidgen to poison a pigeon in the park.
That was Tom Lehrer with... As I said, a very rare single of Poisoning Pigeons in the Park. The flip side of it is the Masochism Tango, a very prized part of my record collection. Another specialty of my record collection, as those of you who are regular listeners to this program know, is British comedy. I collect a lot of that stuff, and I think a lot of it is wonderful, and it is less widely heard in this country, at least. And it's funny, I was very surprised by your responses to my request for... suggestions for what to include in this program, and something that kept popping up in your letters was this routine, which was featured in a program that I did on the Amnesty International benefit concerts that John Cleese organizes in England. And this is a routine featuring John Cleese and Jonathan Lynn, based on Michelangelo and the Pope discussing the Last Supper.
Michelangelo to see the Pope. Michelangelo Buonarroti to see the Pope.
Evening, Your Grace. Evening, Michelangelo. I want to have a word with you about this Last Supper of yours.
Oh, yes?
I'm not happy with it.
Oh, dear. It took hours.
Not happy at all.
Do the jellies worry you?
No.
Oh, they add a bit of colour, don't they? Oh, I know. You don't like the kangaroo.
What kangaroo?
I'll alter it, no sweat.
I never saw a kangaroo.
Well, it's right at the back, but I'll paint it out, no problem. I'll make him into a disciple.
Ah.
All right now?
That's the problem.
What is?
The disciples.
Are they too Jewish? I made Judas the most Jewish.
No, it's just that there are 28 of them.
Another one would hardly notice me. So I'll make the kangaroo into a disciple. All right. We'll lose the kangaroo altogether. I don't mind. I was never completely happy with it.
That's not the point. There are 28 disciples.
Too many?
Well, of course it's too many.
Well, in a way, but I wanted to give the impression of a huge get-together, you know, a real Last Supper. Not just any old supper, but a proper final treat. A real mother of a blowout.
There were only 12 disciples at the Last Supper.
Well, supposing some of the others happened to drop by.
There were only 12 disciples altogether.
Well, maybe they'd invited some friends.
There were the 12 disciples and our Lord at the Last Supper. The Bible clearly says so.
No friends?
No friends.
Waiters?
No.
Cabaret?
No.
Well, you see, I like them. They fill out the canvas. I mean, I suppose we could lose 3 or 4 of them. You know, make 1 or 2 of them.
There were only 12 disciples.
I've got it. We'll call it the penultimate supper.
What?
There must have been one. I mean, if there was a last one, there must have been one before that, right?
Yes.
Right, so this is the penultimate supper. The Bible doesn't say how many people were there, does it?
No,
but there you are.
Look. The Last Supper is a significant event in the life of our Lord. The penultimate supper was not, even if they had a conjurer and a steel bat. Now, I commissioned a Last Supper from you, and a Last Supper I want.
Yeah, but look...
With 12 disciples and 1 Christ.
One?
Yes, one. Now, will you please tell me what in God's name possessed you to paint this with 3 Christs in it?
It works, mate!
It does not work!
It does! It looks great! The fat one balances the 2 skinny ones!
There was only 1 saviour!
Well, I know that. Everyone knows that. But what about a bit of artistic license?
1 redeemer!
I'll tell you what you want, mate! You want a bloody photographer! Not a creative artist with some imagination!
I'll tell you what I want! I want a Last Supper! With 1 Christ, 12 disciples, no kangaroos by Thursday lunch, or you don't get paid.
Bloody fascist!
Look, I'm the bloody Pope. I may not know much about art, but I know what I like.
Just wonderful. Just wonderful. Another classic of British comedy is a routine by Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, which they've done together for a long time, going back to their Beyond the Fringe days. I'm a big fan of Cook and Moore, as those of you who listen to this program are aware. And this was a piece from Beyond the Fringe 64. It was the second go-round for Beyond the Fringe, and it obviously was done in 1964. And it deals with a talent agent and a one-legged actor.
Miss Rigby, Stella, my love, would you send in the next auditioner, please? Mr. Spigot, I believe it is. Mr. Spigot, please. Mr. Mr. Spigot?
Yes, Spigot, the name, Spigot by name, Spigot by nature.
Good, yes, well, for a moment. Now, Mr. Spigot, you are auditioning, are you not, for the part of Tarzan?
Right.
Now, Mr. Spigot, I couldn't help noticing almost at once now, you are a one-legged person.
You noticed that?
When you've been in the business as long as I have, Mr. Spigot, you get to notice these little things almost instinctively. Now, Mr. Spigot, you, a one-legged man, are applying for the role of Tarzan.
Right.
A role that traditionally involves the use of a two-legged actor.
True.
And yet you, a unidexter, are applying for the role.
Definitely.
A role for which two legs would seem to be the minimum requirement. Well, Mr. Spigot, need I point out to you where your deficiency lies as regards landing the role?
Yes, I think you ought to.
Need I say with overmuch emphasis that it is in the leg division that you are deficient?
The leg division?
The leg division, Mr. Spigot.
The leg division.
The leg division. You are deficient in it to the tune of one. Your right leg, I like. I like your right leg. It's a lovely leg for the role. That's what I said when I saw it come in. I said, lovely leg for the role. Lovely leg for the role. I've got nothing against your right leg. The trouble is, neither have you. You fall down on your left.
You mean it's inadequate?
It's inadequate, Mr. Spigot, and to my mind, at any rate, the British public is not yet ready for the sight of a one-legged ape man swinging through the jungly tendrils. However, don't despair, Mr. Spigot. After all, you score over a man with no legs at all. I mean, should a legless man come in here demanding the role, I should have no hesitation in saying, get out, run away.
So there's still a chance?
There is still a very good chance, Mr. Spigot. If we get no two-legged character actors in here within the next 18 months, there is every chance that you, a unidexter, will be the very type of person we shall probably, in some way, be attempting at some time to contact telephonically. I'm sorry I can't be more definite, but you must understand what with all the difficulties of the BO process.
That'll bring to a close this edition of Funny Stuff, featuring the best of Funny Stuff based on your suggestions and my arbitrary taste, mainly based on your suggestions. Join me again next week for more of these. These haven't been easy to pick, and I don't suppose it'll get any easier for next week. Let's see. Oh, a few other people to thank while we're celebrating the first year of Funny Stuff. The board ops, Carrie Breeze, and before him, Bert White, who have made sure that the show has gone off on time. As far as getting off on time is concerned, I also especially want to thank Isabel Holt, who has never once complained of my tendency to run a couple minutes over into a program. One of my New Year's resolutions for this year is that I will get off on time. Whether I'll be able to keep that, I don't know. It's probably like most New Year's resolutions. Any comments, criticisms? I do appreciate your letters. I do tend to answer them. Come to Bob Claster, C-L-A-S-T-E-R, Funny Stuff, KCRW, 1900 Pico Boulevard, Santa Monica, California, 90405. Until next week, this is your host, Bob Claster, thanking you for listening, and hoping you'll join me again next week, and reminding you to always keep that sense of humor well exercised. You never know when you're going to need it. Good night, everybody.